Panetta and Buenaventure. Buenaventura. And Mr. Galloway, I believe you're up first.
Thank you. I'm Gabe Galloway. I represent Maximo Panetta in this case. The argument I make is I see this as a due process argument. I know it's an unconventional one, but I think that at sentencing, if a defendant objects to enhancements on a factual basis or even on any basis, but I do argue that in this case my client did make factual objections at sentencing, it seems like it makes sense to me that the government should be the one that has the burden to show that these enhancements are appropriate, that these facts happened. Sure, we're at sentencing, we're not at trial anymore, but we're not on appeal either. The government in the trial court, I think, should have to bear the burden. And my client didn't plead guilty to allegations that supported these enhancements. I find myself in the position where I have to argue for a new or a competing rule of law, I guess. I've cited a case from another circuit. I'd rather this circuit's jurisprudence were on my side, but I find myself in this position here. There are a couple things I would note. As I alluded to, the government argues that the objections made by trial counsel for my client were merely legal objections, that they sort of admitted the facts that were the basis for these sentencing enhancements, and then they said, even with these facts, we can reason that the legal conclusion shouldn't stand. But that has been puzzling me because when I've come before this court, and I want to argue that a sentencing matter, an enhancement, is a more legal conclusion than a fact conclusion, I find that the consensus is that this is a factual matter, that the district judge has discretion to find these facts as the fact finder, and so they stand unless they're clearly erroneous. I don't see why here, where the case, the Seventh Circuit case, requires a factual dispute to be made, I don't see why this kind of approach to the sentencing enhancements should now be a fact matter strictly.
What enhancement are you mainly?
Well, my client had an enhancement for possessing a handgun, right, and for being a leader organizer, or for some aggravated role. And they disputed that he possessed a firearm. They said, well, it was found in his apartment, but he wasn't the only one that lived there, and he had just moved in. It's not his gun. I think that's a fact dispute. I mean, I don't see this isn't a complex legal question that has a balancing test. You either own a gun or you don't. Saying a district judge saying, I would think that Party A owned a gun, I think Party B didn't own a gun, that's a fact conclusion.
Who else was in the apartment?
I don't know who else was in the apartment.
Well, didn't the government submit the portion of an interview with the co-defendant discussing the fact that Maximo had purchased a handgun? Wasn't that in the PSR?
I don't recall. I mean,
the PSR is your problem, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, but my position here is that...
Well, is there evidence, is there something in the PSR that attaches a gun to Maximo? Mm-hmm.
There is obviously something in the PSR that the district court relied upon for this conclusion. It's my position that the district court should rely on testimony rather than the PSR. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think Maximo submitted his own affidavit saying he had just moved into the house where the weapon was found, right?
This was not put into testimony at the sentencing hearing?
No, that was in the PSR, though.
Okay.
Wasn't it? That's what I'm just verifying. That was my understanding, and I thought the government had presented in the PSR, had included in the PSR this portion of the interview by co-defendant who said it was his gun.
Okay. I'm having trouble following you. Are you saying that there's...
PSR, there were two things. Maximo saying, I just moved into the house, didn't know... And I just moved into the house where the weapon was found, and the co-defendant saying that Maximo had purchased a handgun. I thought those two were in the PSR.
That sounds right. I can't deny that. But my argument is...
Have you read the PSR?
Yes, okay. Yes, Your Honor. But when I reviewed these briefs, those affidavits weren't part of what I reviewed when I was reviewing the briefs.
All right.
For this.
So your time is. Are there any more questions? I'm happy to allow some more time. You may be seated.
Thank you,
Mr. Jesser.
And Your Honors, may it please the Court, on behalf of Ephraim Buenaventura, we concur with and wish to adopt the arguments of Mr. Galloway on behalf of Maximo.
He got 120 months.
Yes, Your Honor.
Maximo got 240.
Yes.
It sounds like for having the same guideline range, your client came out pretty well.
Yes, Your Honor, but perhaps part of the problem here was that this is the first plea hearing I've encountered where there was no stipulation of facts. And that started off a process that, if you'll pardon the expression, it would appear that the district court basically rubber-stamped the PSI with no independent proof at the sentencing hearing of the facts on which judgment was entered. And that's why we cited the Eighth Circuit Court case, although the government has cited the Seventh Circuit case, which is also on point. But we concur with Maximo's arguments that this does devolve around the due process consideration to put something other than the PSI into the sentencing record, into the record on which judgment and sentence was based. I have nothing further.
Any question? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Connell?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Paul Connell. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Western District of Wisconsin. I was responsible for the prosecution of both Maximo and Ephraim Pineda Buenaventura below. The sole issue in this case really is whether the district court clearly erred when it made findings as it did with regard to both defendants' role in the offense and as to Maximo Pineda Buenaventura, the firearm enhancement. The district court did not clearly err because neither defendant objected to the underpinning the facts in the PSR, and absent a specific objection to Judge Crabb, she'd have no reason not to just adopt the PSR, the addendum, and find as she did. I will just briefly start with Mr. Ephraim Pineda Buenaventura. In his actual objection that he filed to his role in the offense, adjustment under Section 3B1.1, he admits to the facts, and I'll just read from it here. He wrote, instead, the facts in this case support a finding that the defendant was a manager supervisor as opposed to a leader organizer. So the Judge Crabb was entitled to look at the facts, and furthermore, at the outset of sentencing, Judge Crabb confirmed with the defense lawyer that his objection was really that the facts are what they are, and you're saying your client should get just a 3-level bump instead of a 4-level bump, and he said that's correct.
Mr. Connell,
yes.
Help me out here. With Ephraim, I'm having difficulty with Judge Crabb's discussion at separate Appendix 13. This is the defendant who was involved in two conspiracies, am I correct?
Correct, yeah. Thank you for your question. I can address that.
I tried a head count here. Did he direct the requisite number of people in the conspiracy he had with his brother, or did he direct the requisite number of people in the other conspiracy?
And the answer, Your Honor, is both.
Were they the same people?
In both cases, no.
He had five in each.
He was involved in two conspiracies, both of which involved at least five or more participants. The grand jury returned an indictment naming him as a defendant in 08 CR 100. That's the case that's up on appeal. He was named as an unindicted or a co-conspirator, but not a defendant in case 08 CR 105.
So he's up here on the conspiracy with his brother.
Correct.
And these individuals she names at SA 13, are they the ones who were involved in the conspiracy with his brother?
I'm sorry, I didn't bring the briefs up here, Your Honor. The indictment is certainly part of the record, and I think that my recollection is when she laid out at sentencing and in the statement of reasons the individuals that he recruited, I think she was referring to the case where he was just named as a co-conspirator and not as a defendant.
Which one are you talking about here?
That would be then case 08 CR 105, Your Honor. Efren.
I'm afraid you've got me confused. People she mentioned were the conspiracy in which he was indicted and was being sentenced here?
No. However, the PSR does explain that when Maximo left the country for a while, when he fled to Mexico because he thought he was going to be arrested, and Efren took over that telephone, that wiretap telephone, in the case that he was sentenced on, he also controlled those people.
I see.
During that time period.
And this discussion then would be with respect to the other conspiracy.
I believe that's right.
Why would she get into that?
Because it is part of his relevant conduct, certainly.
And so she was counting to pump up for the role in the offense of the conspiracy for which he was not being sentenced?
Correct. Although, Your Honor, the weight of cocaine that was attributed to him came in, again, from all of his relevant conduct involving...
In computing relevant conduct, do you take into consideration the role in the offense enhancement computed on relevant conduct, or is it computed on the offense charged, convicted, for which you're being sentenced?
I think it's obviously the latter that you stated there, Your Honor.
That's
However,
why I'm wondering why she's off talking about this.
Okay, well, even if you set those aside, she did set out all sorts of other reasons why he would qualify for the role in the offense adjustment in the case in which he was sentenced. That would be that he made arrangements to buy a large quantity of cocaine. He had the cocaine delivered to his own residence. He had cocaine tested for purity. He was a primary contact for customers. He directed others to deliver cocaine and delivered cocaine for himself. So
this is all about Efren.
Correct, Your Honor. Right.
I don't interrupt Judge Ripple, but I'm confused here. They both had the same sentencing guideline, recommended or whatever, advisory guidelines. Efren gets 120 months. Maximo gets 210.
We filed a 5K motion at sentencing, Your Honor.
What was it, the gun? Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. They both had the same base offense level. They both got a firearm adjustment. They both got the same role in the offense adjustment.
Well, how do they have such a disparity in sentence? That's just my curiosity.
Because I filed a 5K motion for Efren.
Oh, you did?
Because
is that where you got information against Maximo? Is that...
No, he didn't cooperate against his brother at all. His cooperation.
Was this is somewhere else that this came up? I'm sorry.
Okay. It was no, that's fine.
Okay, well that explains it because it's not raised. That's all I'm asking.
Judge Crabb gave him a substantial.
Let me go back to this. This is the kind of thing that will hang his case up for weeks and weeks in chambers. That's why I'm asking you about it. Line 22, SA 13. You enlisted a number of other individuals, including Tadolo, Ventura, Perfecto, Pinedata, Duque, Jesus, Duque, Pinedata, and Otengiel, Mendoza, to work as runners. What's she talking about? Which conspiracy?
Thank you for bringing it. Those are the defendants that were named in the other case, 08CR105. Where
she's mentioning it here as part of her justification for leader and organizer.
Right.
That's wrong.
Well, that was only part of her justification, though, as I just pointed out. There were other reasons that she gave why he would qualify for the four-level adjustment as opposed to the three-level adjustment that he was seeking at the time of sentencing.
If I may, it seems to me this is a place where a prosecutor protect his record.
And obviously I fell down on the job there with that.
It does really come at you and say, what have we got here?
However, I think there is enough left, even if the court was to say, well, that was error by Judge Crabb, to include, to base the role in the offense adjustment on that. There were several other reasons, as I laid out and as she lays out, both in her statement of reasons and at sentencing, where the court could affirm. I have nothing else for the court. I would rely on my briefs and the argument here today and ask the court to affirm the conviction of sentences of both defendants unless there are questions from the panel.
All right. Thank you. Your co-counsel didn't use all his time, so you can have two additional minutes if you wish. That is Mr. Galloway. Do you cede that to him, Mr. Jesser?
I have no remarks.
All right. Do you have anything, Mr. Jesser?
Certainly. Only half a minute.
Yeah, certainly. How much time does he have? 3 minutes, you actually.
Speaking in my remarks earlier to find a delicate, respectful manner of indicating that the record is sloppy. The sentencing hearing was sloppy. The plea hearing was sloppy. And I think the court's question sua sponte to Mr. Connell bring that out. That's all I have further.
All right. And counsel, were either of you appointed?
Yes, both.
Yes, we thank you for your service to your clients and to the court. It is we couldn't actually function in these criminal cases if we didn't have lawyers who volunteered like you have. And we thank you for your fine representation of the government. We'll take the case under advisement.